Meanwhile, at the DC Nation,
we are tonight's entertainment.
You're overwhelmed, freezes
overwhelmed. The shark ripped all the guts, Frey.
None of the Robins ever complained.
Titans, go!
You're going to melt just like a grilled sandwich.
And show you just how powerful I really am.
Always holding strong.
So I know we should escape my sight, but those who worship me this might be where my power, Green Lantern, lies.
But let the universe howl in despair, for
I have returned.
We have no more use for this one. Kill him.
Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the DC Nation podcast, dedicated to reviewing all the amazing content DC Comics provides to you, because it's fans. Most notably focusing on the TV shows Gotham, The Flash, Girl, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow. I'm Dan Schmidt, your host. Again, with me is a guy who could probably explain the multiverse as well and as scientifically as Professor Stein, my co-host.
Hey everybody, it's Nico, and welcome to Across the Airwaves DC Nation. On this week's episode, we continue our coverage of the DC Nation with the fourth episode of Season 2 of Gotham, along with episodes of the second season of Flash and the fourth season of Arrow. Finally, we wrap up the episode with some listener feedback.
Yeah, we're going to dive right into some of the DC Nation news headlines we have this week, with news about Paul Reubens playing a new character, appearing on Gotham, and Mark Hamill reprising his role as the Twin Trickster. Got the Flash probably just in time for Star Wars.
Mark Hamill to return as Trickster for Flash Season 2. With the anticipation of Star Wars The Force Awakens at an all-time high, it's good to see that Luke Skywalker himself, Mark Hamill, has not forgotten about his DC fans. According to reports, Hamill will be reprising his role of James Jesse, aka the Trickster, on Season 2 of The Flash. Rumors of Hamill's return began this weekend when pictures of him with crew members of the hit TV show started popping up on different social media outlets. ComicBook.com reached out to the CW, who gave official confirmation that we will indeed be seeing the Trickster again this season. With Hamill returning and John Wesley Shipp portraying Barry's father, this version of The Flash is continuing its tradition of paying homage to its 1990s predecessor. There is currently no word on which episode Hamill will appear in, nor what will lead to the Trickster's return. What we do know is that we are definitely looking forward to it. Of course, The Flash airs Tuesdays on the CW. Arrow's Damian Dark will cross over to The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. Prepare yourself for a lot more FaceTime with Neil McDonough. The actor, who joined the cast of Arrow this season as the villain Damian Dark, will be crossing over to both the show's spin-offs, according to comicbook.com. That's three times the McDonough we thought we were getting. I'm excited for the crossover potential, but the author of the article that we linked to raises the question of whether this will feel totally organic, or whether the writers are shoehorning him in because he's so amazing and they want to use him as much as possible. It sounds like he may have more to do on DC's Legends of Tomorrow, which premieres at mid-season and brings together characters from both Arrow and The Flash to confront an unstoppable immortal threat. Quote, I look exactly the same in 1975, but you see he's not as confident and doesn't have such an agenda as he does now. It's possible his character may somehow be connected to Vandal Savage, DC's Legends of Tomorrow's big bad. Anyway, I think this sounds pretty fun, and I'm happy for more Neil McDonough. Paul Reubens to play Penguin's father. As Gotham's Robin Lord Taylor put it, Pee Wee Herman is playing my dad. The Penguin's portrayer excitedly announced that casting announcement on Sunday at Gotham's New York Comic-Con panel that Paul Reubens will play Papa Capapult during Season 2. Funny enough, this is Reubens' second turn as the Penguin's pop, having first played it in the role in 1992's Batman Returns. Meanwhile, his voice acting credits include Batmite on the Batman Brave and the Bold animated series. You know what? I actually like this casting. Supergirl casts the Kryptonian villain Nan. Melissa Benoist Kara will be taking on a foe from her home planet this season on Supergirl. CBS's new drama has cast Chris Vance as the Kryptonian villain Nan, according to The Hollywood Reporter. The character previously appeared in the first two Superman films starring Christopher Reeve. Nan was the muscle-bound, somewhat slow-witted henchman of General Zod, though this latest incarnation seems to take a bit of a different direction. Supergirl's version is a former scientist within the House of El and a brutal Kryptonian military officer who stands to become the heroine's biggest threat. Not much more on the details. Look for Supergirl to premiere on CBS Monday night next month. And that's the news with Nico, DC Headlines for this week.
Cool beat. And with that, we're going to get into a Gotham episode that brought back a guy who is pretty well known as playing a police officer to his role sort of as the commissioner, the character he played on The Shield. So let's talk about the Gotham episode, Strike Force.
Captain Barnes arrives to take over the GCPD and makes Jim his second-in-command. Meanwhile, Theo kidnaps Gertrude as leverage to force Oswald to kill the top two contenders for mayor, and Bruce meets Silver St. Cloud.
I love the addition of the commission himself, if you've ever seen that old-school show. Veteran The Shield actor, Michael Chiklis, being added to this show. I know it goes against the Batman timeline by bringing a by-the-book commissioner into this show, but the only commissioner we've ever known that has existed before, Gordon was the corrupt Commissioner Loeb. But I think this works for a younger Gordon to have a mentor like Captain Barnes, who he currently thinks runs the GCPD the way he wants it to be done, to show Gordon both extremes of a police commissioner, for him to realize that he needs to land right in the middle to deal with Gotham's problems. And I think Bullock sees the writing on the wall, with some of his comments in this episode, that it's not going to work out with Captain Barnes, because as much as I like him, and Michael Chiklis' performance, he's probably not going to be the right fit for Gotham, by either getting the young rookies got the Strike Force killed, which needs to probably happen as an explanation of why Gordon in the future will keep corrupt officers got the force to keep an eye on them, rely on Batman for certain circumstances, can probably team up with the Penguin to take down Theo Balaban, because he's someone that neither one of them wants in Gotham. Nico, did you like the addition of Michael Chiklis to this show? Do you think his tenure as commissioner or captain has an expiration date because his tactics are just not right to deal with a place like Gotham City?
I do, Dan, to both your questions. I've always really enjoyed Michael Chiklis, back from the time on the commish, to the Shield, to Fantastic Four, to No Ordinary Family, to Vegas, and now I love the character on Gotham. I do think he has an expiration date on this show, because ultimately we know that Gordon takes over as commissioner eventually, and to do so, Chiklis' character has to be out of the picture. My guess is that they will go the route you suggested and have his tactics be too extreme by the book, and the police force will become overwhelmed with attrition and firings that the bare-bones clean force that Captain Barnes keeps will not be able to effectively police the city, and that will get some, if not all, of the Strike Force rookies killed. The loss of these people and the ineffectiveness of the police force will demoralize Barnes and lead to his downfall, death, or quitting the job. I think Barnes is the right man to inspire and teach Gordon, but he goes too far for what Gotham can handle, and in doing so, I believe teaches Gordon that he needs to keep those corrupt cops on the force like you suggested, and keep tabs on them, or they'll just reinforce the ranks of the bad guys. But this time will be instrumental in Gordon's development, but I think many mistakes will be made as well that will later inform Gordon's actions when Batman arrives. So I think this is a very important learning time for Gordon, and it will influence him in the future, so in that sense it's really good to have this Barnes character. I just think Barnes is going to be ineffective.
Yeah, do you think he's going to end up in a tragic way? Or him and Gordon being in bad terms when he leaves?
I think more likely the tragic way. I think he will leave in disgrace, or he will have been killed, or his tactics will fail so badly that he just quits and leaves because he's so demoralized. Well, those are the ways that I see it. I don't
see... Because he seems like a good man.
Yeah, I don't see him and Gordon being on opposite sides, even though, you know, Gordon's struggling with the fact that he's kind of a little bit under the Penguin's thumb. I think he's going to come clean about that and tell Barnes, hey, look, it was self-defense, but I was in a bad situation and Penguin put me there, and now he has this leverage over me, and Barnes will be like, it's only leverage if you let him make it leverage.
Right.
So I do think that there's going to be some friction there. I think Barnes is going to maybe see Gordon as a little less than what he thought he was, but at the same time, I think he's going to understand. We may see a little friction there, maybe some threats from Barnes to Gordon, but I think ultimately in the end they're going to realize that they work best together. And then
could we see a sacrificial death where Barnes may say, I'm wrong, I was wrong about this, but I want to make it right, and he sacrifices himself to make it right?
Maybe. I just don't know. I think he's going to get himself killed with his overly aggressive tactics, and maybe some of his men killed as well. And
I just don't want him to look stupid.
No, I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be that he looks stupid. I think it'll just be that he didn't understand what was necessary in Gotham. And it's a hard lesson that Gordon has to learn through Barnes's failure.
Okay, I can see that. But a great addition of Michael Chiklis.
Yes.
Just brilliant move on the show, just to keep making it better. I mean, it was already come out of the gate really strong this season, but that was just adding another notch to it. And I was very surprised to see the image of Alfred punching Selina in the face, telling her to stay away from Bruce. Because the older Alfred we know from the comic books did agree with Selina, or shall we say, Catwoman's tactics of stealing and killing people who threatened her. But he never thought that she was a bad thing for Bruce. I mean, he knew they couldn't be together unless Selina decided to go full-on superhero. But I always thought he had the the sixth sense that Bruce and Selina were meant to be together. Now, again, with this show, they need to do things like this to keep Bruce and Selina apart, to avoid the issue of last season of doing too much too soon. But I think Alfred is ultimately going to realize that Bruce is safer with Selina than Silver St. Cloud. Again, it's staying in touch with the comic books. I think Silver is going to be an innocent bystander to Theo's plans. Since in the recent origin story, Cup Batman, known as Zero Year, Bruce envisions a life where he marries Silver, but because of her connections to Theo, Bruce is going to develop a distrust for classic Batman paranoia that has ruined so many romantic relationships for him, since right now, he seems to fall much easier for a girl's charm than when he becomes a man. Nico, is this where you foresee things going for Bruce and his romantic relationships? Do you think Alfred will grow to accept Selina a little more?
Dan, I was shocked by Alfred hitting Selina. But then again, I sometimes forget that this is not Earth One Alfred we've known and loved in so many other stories and comics. Still, I think it was out of character for Alfred to strike a woman, especially a child, but I too understand that it was used as a device to keep Bruce and Selina apart for the time being, and to introduce the new love interest for Bruce, Silver St. Cloud. I'm not sure if I like this as the means to do that, but I understand the necessity. Yes. I thought it could have been handled differently without him actually striking her, but maybe just hitting her with an emotional blow, but maybe they didn't think that was going to be strong enough.
I guess that's what it was. I mean, I could see him telling her off. That seems likely. The punching was a little much. Again, she did kill his friend. Again, he didn't know all the circumstances behind that, so I guess he got it, but at the same time,
yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, he did say the hit was for killing Reggie, so I guess he's treating her just like another bloke, and, you know,
right.
I could see that, but I still thought it was out of character a little bit. He did hit her even harder, I thought, with the emotional blow, so
yeah.
I think it was just shocking, and maybe that was the point, so in that effect, it was very successful, because it shocked us, and it shocked her, so. But now, as for Silver, while I agree that she will probably be somewhat innocent in the plots of Theo, I think she has been told by Theo to get close to Bruce, and maybe even to make Bruce fall in love with her. But she won't know for what reason or even why her uncle has such an interest in the boy. But I do foresee her not being completely innocent, but we can forgive it as being manipulated by her uncle. Then again, it could be that she's in on the plan, and that would make it even more sinister and her even more sinister.
Okay, yeah, that's possible. Again, Silver Slate Cloud has never been portrayed as a villain or a character that's up to no good on the show.
Right.
She's always been kind of the sweet and innocent. Love interest, she was a movie star, so there was some of that aspect. And where it was kind of difficult for Bruce to be with her, but she was more innocent than even probably Vicki Vale was.
Right.
Because Vicki Vale was trying to figure out Bruce's secret of what was going on.
Yeah, and expose who the Batman was.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vicki doesn't make sense at this point, because Bruce doesn't really have a secret per se yet.
Right.
So I get why they went with Silver, because she was around when he was a teenager. This is a little bit more earlier, but I think we are going to get to see that all. Selina, Bruce love interest, argument and give and take, which has been a big part of that in comics. Now, speaking of romance, things are heating up between Edward and Kristen. I think this storyline is going to slow burn in the background during the Rise of the Villains arc until the end, where either Kristen's going to get killed as a result of Theo Gallivan trying to destroy that residential area to develop his vision of Gotham, or Kristen being attracted to Edward hearing voices in his head is either going to lead her down a path of insanity that will cause her tragic death. Either way, I think something big is going to happen between Edward and Kristen at the end of this Rise of the Villains story to set up the next arc as the Rise of the Riddler. Because this is where you first see things going. Nico, what do you think is going to happen with Kristen that's going to make Edward snap?
So, Dan, I actually have two theories. First, that something Theo does ends up killing Miss Kringle, like you said, and leads Edward down a dark path that ultimately leads to him snapping completely and giving into his darker side or his insane side, that, you know, that inner voice that tells him or forces him to be his better self, as he calls it, but in reality is his Joker self, or I mean his Riddler self and his darker self. My second theory is that Edward will actually drive Miss Kringle away or kill her himself in a moment when the other personality takes over, and that will be what ultimately fractures his mind for good and sends him on the path toward the Riddler. Like right now, he's still kind of fighting it, and he is able to control the other side. I think whatever happens with Miss Kringle is what ultimately allows the other half of his personality to come out and be dominant. I could easily see it going either way, and equally will work well. So I think it could easily and equally go either way.
Because I think Miss Kringle may have a little bit of a screw loose too. we'll see.
Well, she definitely likes the bad boys, you know?
Right.
She definitely does not go for the sweet and innocent version of Edward. She likes him when he was more forceful, was more, well, you know, he dove and took her to the ground and protected her from that bullet that was headed for her. You know, she likes a man of action. She likes a darker side of him. And so I think that probably has something to do with her, you know, being a little bit not 100% sane. So I do agree that she's probably got a little bit of a screw loose.
Well,
I just don't know if I see her going insane with him, you know.
The Riddler on the 60s series, which obviously the show has borrowed a lot from.
Sure.
Well, he had a gay girlfriend in an episode. I was pretty famous. He's a pretty famous Riddler episode. So I'm wondering if that's, you know, them playing with that storyline.
It definitely could be. I'm just not sure if I'm ready for that or if I know that that's where it's going.
Right. Well, it's better than them trying to force Harley Quinn on the show.
Yeah.
If they're going to do something like that. Finally, we see the Penguin have some great scenes so far this year, but he hasn't had a really big role to play in the Rise of the Villain story until this episode, where the writers continue to make this the best incarnation of the Penguin we've seen on screen. By having him turn down Theo's offer to make the city burn, because that's something he's not going to do to stay in line with Batman and Gordon. Because that's something he's not going to do to stay in line with why Batman and Gordon let the Penguin do his thing in the future. Can only put him in his place when necessary. Because he's one of those villains who doesn't want to see the city burn, but seeing the Penguin be forced to do doing something he hates, which is getting his hand dirty, is brilliant, because it takes us to a realm of conflict for the Penguin that we've really never seen before, since we've always seen him with nothing to lose but his criminal empire. So a blackmailed Penguin is going to be fun to see these writers play with, because you like seeing the Penguin being forced into doing something he absolutely hates. And what effect do you think failing to probably save Mother could have on the villain? Because I had already thought he had reached the point of being the full-on Penguin Guido from the comic books.
You know, I'm not sure that I do like the Penguin being blackmailed into killing these people for Theo. I like the idea that the Penguin can outmaneuver any one of his rivals in Gotham, and I would prefer him to be able to do that with Theo as well, and maybe he eventually will. That's actually what I think will ultimately happen. The Penguin will be able to find his mother, or rather Butch will find her, and then be able to go after Theo for what he'd done to his mother. That is also where I see Penguin's father coming back into the picture in that story as well. I'm not sure how that all works out, but he plays an important part, I'm sure. But as for Penguin being the full-on Penguin from the comics, I actually think he has a long way to go. In the comics, he is much more confident, he's much more competent, and able to handle things, and really the only one who ever seems to give the Penguin any grief or trouble or foil his plans is Batman himself. So I feel like he still needs to evolve further to become that version or that skilled Penguin character. Sure, he's well on his way, but I see there are still quite a bit of things that he needs to experience, learn, and lose. And by that I mean, I think his mother is actually holding him back from his true potential. And when he loses her, which I don't know if it's going to be from Theo or some other catastrophe down the road, he will have lost any tie back to who he was before becoming the boss. And that will free him to be the full-on Penguin. So I think that that's actually going to come later in the series, and I don't think they're going to kill her here with Theo. I think Butch is going to be able to save her.
So we're probably going to have the father come in. Could say she's a lead weight you don't need. Forget about her. Gotta let her just die or whatever happens to her happen.
Potentially. I'm not sure what Paul Reubens' father character is going to be. I just know that he's right. Coming at this point.
But I just feel like Penguin's going to want to appease him. Or he's going to be very hard on Penguin. Saying, yeah, you made this all criminal empire and stuff, but you're still nothing. Could that be what forces him?
Okay.
Because the cruelty that he shows Zaz in the comic books, I have not seen come out of this version of it. So something traumatic needs to happen, more than what we've seen so far.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see where it goes. Could I like Paul Reubens coming in? He's great at really everything he's done, but this is very much so a Tim Burton-y world for him to play in. So I think we're going to get some good stuff with him coming in. Yeah, just kudos to this show on getting the great guest stars. You know, Michael Chiklis now and Paul Reubens, and even bringing in someone like that actor, Cameron Monaghan, who did a great job at playing a Joker precursor.
Yep.
So with that, we're going to move into talking about another show that really I thought was rock solid when it came to the guest stars in terms of heroes. Yeah, that's the Flash episode. Good title, The Flash of Two Worlds.
My name is Barry Allen. I am the fastest man alive.
Jake Eric, a mysterious man who claims that he's the Flash in a parallel world, warns the team about an evil speedster named Zoom who plans to destroy the Flash, while Barry wonders whether to trust the newcomer. Joe deals with Patty Spivot, an officer who wants to join the Metahuman Task Force.
This week's episode of The Flash brought Jake Eric to live-action television for the first time in an actual speaking role. And I've got to say, like every other character they've introduced on this show, they hit the character right on the money. From his sense of honor, down to the reason why he wears his trademark helmet to honor his father, who fought in the War of the Americas. I also like the conflict, because I wish between Barry and Jay, because it wasn't the usual disagreement on tactics that occur in these superhero teams. Because it built off of last season, with Barry afraid to trust good other speedster after his last mentor, Garrison Wells, aka the Reverse Flash, betrayed him. Nico, did you like the betrayal of Jay Garrick in this episode? Because did Barry's trust issues with Jay seem natural after Harrison Wells broke his trust last season?
Yeah, of course it made sense. Barry trusted Wells, and it nearly cost him everything. Wells turned out to be the man who killed his mom and framed his dad, and turned out to be his greatest enemy from the future. Now this new guy shows up, seems to know everything about him, and is offering to help train him just like Dr. Wells. I'd have been wary as well, but I'm glad this distrust only lasted about two-thirds of an episode, because Iris was right when she asked Barry who he was, because the Barry Allen we know and love trusts people, almost to a fault, and I think we would have lost something if Barry was too distrustful for too long, and I think it would have frustrated us. So I'm glad they kind of wrapped it up in this one episode. Sure, it makes sense to be cautious, but it almost got to the point where he was not trusting Jay despite the evidence and help he had offered, breaking his own comment and rule from earlier in the episode about approaching this scientifically. Once the evidence started mounting and was so heavily in Jay's favor, it was almost out of fear and only fear that Barry was not trusting him and not using him as an ally. So I think if it had gone any longer, we would have been really frustrated. I think they did an excellent job and really, really played with it well.
I most definitely agree with you on that. I mean, I think it was kind of was wrapped up within one episode, but it needed to be addressed as well.
Sure.
I think somebody needed to say, hey, you know, Barry's going to have an issue with this, because I would if I was in his position.
Yeah, of course.
Yep. Now, at the same time with Jay being introduced, I know our good friend of the podcast, Mark Schreider, did not like this incarnation of Jay Garrick being as young, but it seemed like it was more than just for sex appeal, as Jay started becoming gay love interest for Caitlin, which makes me wonder if her possible breakup with Ronnie for him to be on Legends of Tomorrow will be her moving on to Earth 2 to be with Jay, or maybe something of that nature. Nico, what did you think of Jay Garrick becoming a romantic attraction for Caitlin? I know it's more off the comic books, but does it work for you?
Well, I think him being a romantic interest for Caitlin is more about her moving on from Ronnie's death. And I don't see this relationship actually going anywhere, because I think she will start feeling guilty about having feelings. And maybe that will lead to her emotional instability or whatever it is that causes her powers to emerge. I don't see a future for Caitlin and Jay. I just don't.
Okay.
But I do see the possibility being what scares Caitlin, that she starts having feelings for someone other than Ronnie, and she feels like she is betraying his memory. And I think that could be what sparks the emotional instability or the strong emotions and fear or whatever that ultimately brings her Killer Frost powers out. I don't think she's going to go dark immediately, but I do think she'll start having some powers, and maybe she's going to hide them as well, like Cisco is, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, but are we in agreement that the Firestorm relationship is not going to work out with Caitlin?
With her and Ronnie?
Yeah, with her and Ronnie, is it destined to kind of fail?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the failure is ultimately what drives her mad or drives her to either be a tragic villain or someone that we understand a little bit of where it's all coming from.
Now, do we want to see that, though? Because you and I had both talked about the possibility that maybe she could stay as Caitlin, and the Killer Frost we are going to see
comes from another Earth.
Yes.
That's actually what I do prefer. But I hope it goes that way. But I'm trying to think of ways that we could make it work this way as well. I really do hope that this Caitlin stays the same, but a Caitlin from another Earth comes as Killer Frost. And then that might give us some insight into where Zoom came from, if he is a Dark Flash, who we'll talk about in a moment, or if he is a bad version of Barry Wells, or Barry Allen, or Harrison Wells, or whoever. It'll give us an insight that maybe good people on our world have gone bad on another in the multiverse. And we've talked about that. We'd love to see the Earth where all of the heroes are supervillains. So,
well, Professor Stein even kind of insinuated that may be a possibility.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that would be a fun way to get Killer Frost on the show, but still maintain our Caitlin that we have absolutely fallen in love with over the first two seasons, or first season and so far.
I think we need to see someone meet their doppelganger, because I'm not necessarily being a or them being evil, because this is too much fun of a concept to play with to not do that.
For sure. But I think what we're going to have happen is I think we're going to see Jay and Barry go to some other worlds as part of their mission to stop or close these rifts in between the worlds. And in doing so, I think they're going to encounter the people. And maybe some of them will follow Barry and Jay back to Earth 1, and we'll get a confrontation between a good Caitlin and an evil Caitlin. But I think think Barry and Jay will be the ones that initially run into some of these bad versions of good people on our Earth.
I like it. Good stuff. Crime Syndicate. Keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly.
This is going to be a big crossover. Now, with all this great potential the multiverse concept has, well, that's, you know, I'm kind of wanting there to be a balance. Going to get back a little bit to all the stuff that still needs to progress with what's going on in Earth 1. Can those Flash villains? With all the potential of this multiverse, you know, I enjoyed meeting Jay Garrick. I love potential it has, but I don't want it to take away from the stuff in the Earth One Flash's world, especially his villains that still need to be developed, get worked on, you know, with the Rogues. I just really hope there's a balance, and you know, if they're not careful, I think they're gonna be. This idea of a bad guy coming from Earth 2 every week and then disposing of him is gonna get a little repetitive. Because as the big hardcore Flash fan, you know, I want to see Rogues. Can't get enough of them. Because I want to see Warren Rod, because that's the big Flash stuff for me. The multiverse is cool. Whatever, but you know, I really want that to be reserved for a Legends of Tomorrow thing. Gotta keep Flash on. You know what I like about that universe, which is his relationship with Rogues. Got villains like Rod. So, do you think this season will establish this balance that you can come looking for between setting the villains of Jay Garrick's world back where they came from and developing all the villains that I love for Barry Allen's universe? Also, do you think the concept of the multiverse is being explained by the writers on the show in a way that a casual viewer can follow by great characters like Professor Stein and Cisco?
Yeah, I do think they did an excellent job of explaining the multiverse and not going too into the weeds and like trying to throw it all in our face all at once. I think this was a good introduction and a good understanding. And as new things about the multiverse come in the next couple weeks or even the rest of the season, I think they'll explain it as needed, what we need to know. And I think that's a perfect and a great way to do it. But as for your question about balance, eventually, yes, I think they will strike a good balance. But for the foreseeable future, I think they are going to be focusing on Zoom and Earth 2 villains and the other world, be it Earth 2 or some other Earth we saw at the end with Harrison Wells, the real Dr. Wells being the savior of Earth, or at least that Earth. Then eventually, I think a metahuman will emerge and Jay will let everyone know that it is not one from his world, and it will turn out to be from Earth 1, and we may get sucked back into the Grodd and Earth 1 metahuman stories as well, and get a good balance between the two going forward from that point. But I think that may be after the mid-season break. And you know what? I'm actually fine with that, because I'm enjoying the multiverse, and I'm hoping before they close the portals, Barry and Jay have to travel to other Earths to stop Zoom, or at least battle him. And then I think in the end of the season, it will take all the good speedsters from across the multiverse to band together to stop Zoom together. I think that's how they're going to end up fighting him, is they're going to all band together, because we'll talk about in a point in a couple minutes when we talk about Harrison Wells. I think what the way Zoom got his power was he steals from speedsters so that he can become the fastest speedster out there. And like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit more in the upcoming thing, but that's why I think they have to go with multiple speedsters from across multiple Earths to eventually stop him.
But it saves another crossover between Flash and Arrow characters for another day, where the team up doesn't just have to be that.
Yeah, exactly.
They can do variations. Great teams up with, you know, the Rogues or different speedsters or whatever. And I think we may get an episode where Jay may be skeptical about the deal he made with Cole, letting the Rogues kind of run loose, could
sure.
do their thing.
Sure.
So that could be fun as well. Because there could be another character that could challenge that. So we'll get to it in just a moment. With that being said, I've really not been a big fan of the character in the first place, pretty much since the beginning. Because, you know, I'm a big Barry and Iris shipper. But I think Patty Smith is going to become this show's Felicity Monster. As Barry and Patty go way too much alike to be together. But I like that they didn't make these two characters complete clones of each other, but just by making Patty go out to be a part of the action as a cop instead of just quirking in the crime lab. With Barry, get her desire to get revenge on Weather Wizard could be interesting, especially if she tries to kill him. Because that breaks the set of rules between the Flash and the Rogues. Because the call of this gag gets all about the game, not trying to kill each other. Also, I think Iris had a great scene in the episode to prove why she is right for Barry, because she could see through him, could make our hero realize when he is making a mistake. When I think Patty could just rush into action without thinking it all through, like Barry has been known to do at times throughout the course of this show. Because did you like the addition of Patty? Could you scared she's going to become the Felicity Wilder of this show?
I like the character for what I believe she is, a placeholder until Barry and Iris are in the right place to be together. Neither of them right now is right for each other at the moment. Iris is still grieving over the loss of Eddie. Barry blames himself for the loss of Eddie and Ronnie and all the other deaths that he could not stop when the singularity opened up. Patty is a love interest for Barry to help him get back to himself, or at least someone to enjoy being with that doesn't know he's the Flash. Someone who can distract him from his grief and his distrust of new people. I think she will will help him get back to the man he wants to be, and one who will be ready for something with Iris in a later season. So in that sense, I'd like her to do that. I think if they give her an expiration date in their minds, regardless of how much the fans love or hate her, it will allow them to tell a much better story. Felicity, which we may get into in the listener feedbacks section, was only meant to be a season one character and never really a love interest for Oliver, or at least not a serious love interest for Oliver. But fans loved her, and the cast and writers loved Emily Bett Richards so much that they brought her on full-time to the show. I don't actually see that happening this time, not because the actress is less talented or anything of that nature, but because they've already sort of told us that Barry and Iris get together in this story, assuming everything has not changed by Eddie killing himself. But they kind of already hinted at that, so it would be silly for them to make this thing with Patty too serious. I think it's going to be what it's meant to be, a placeholder until Iris and him are ready to be together.
Yeah, I think that's the best call. I think that with us knowing the future, that may make people and us feel better about it. But again, I think they're going to play that card where it's still up in the air for people that don't know any better to keep their interest.
Maybe.
You know, just to say, oh yeah, maybe the future has changed, because then it really hasn't. So, we'll see where it goes. I just was very nervous about bringing a character like this. Kid is another love interest, because I just didn't want people going crazy and it messing up the show.
Yeah, I'm hoping they learned from what happened with Felicity and are going to be more careful or do it differently.
Because I could see Patty being a fangirl favorite. Now, as for speculation about where things with Sisko are going, I think in addition to his ability of seeing the past and future by interacting with objects, he's going to discover that his powers can close the wormholes from Earth 2 all over the city. Once that happens, Professor Stein is going to probably spill all the beans about Sisko's powers in honor of the greater good, stopping these wormholes from damaging the fabric of reality. Nico, what do you think about these theories regarding Sisko and his developing powers? Did you like how Professor Stein was the first one to discover Sisko's transformation?
Yeah, I love that it was Professor Stein, because it gives them something to work on together and a reason to bond. Remember, Professor Stein lost Ronnie, and more than just as a friend like everyone else, and Caitlin as a husband, they spent half their time in each other's minds working as Firestorm. That loss must make him so lonely for someone to fill that void, and Sisko, while not mind-melded with Professor Stein, would be a great buddy to share secrets. They both are scientists, and they could share their secrets and discoveries with each other. As for your theory that Sisko's powers will be the key to closing the wormholes, I 100% agree, but I'm hoping that it is what forces Sisko to tell Barry and the team what is going on, and not force Professor Stein to reveal it. I think it would be better coming from Sisko, but if he refuses, then Professor Stein may have to do it and have no other choice.
Yeah, I'll have to stop in and say something. I respect that. So, yeah, you know, I was immediately the idea came that he's going to close the wormholes in my mind because of a show called Primeval. I don't know if you ever saw the British show, but it dealt with anomalies to the past opening up, much like the anomalies to Earth 2 are opening up on this show.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the show, but I never had a chance to watch it.
Right, and a big arc of that story is closing the wormhole.
Okay.
So I think that's where that Sisko probably is going to go on this show. Now, last but not least, I was literally drooling when we got to see Earth 2 at the end of this episode, because the gold hue, the gold school, optimistic sci-fi future look of the clothing people on Earth 2 wear, which kind of reminded me, which was kind of like Tomorrowland, and even some of the objects reminded me of it as well, made me feel like I was flipping through the pages of a rare comic book from the Golden Age during the 1940s that's worth thousands of dollars. Along with this, we got a tremendous shocker, Harrison Wells being alive and well on this parallel world. But is this the man we know as the Reverse Flash, or is Doppelganger was actually a good man? Then again, the good man possibly might not pan out, as he very well could be Zoom, or maybe this interpretation of Zoom is a manifestation of the Dark Flash from the comic books created by Harrison Wells cheating death, because I don't think Jay Garrick lost his powers being sent to Earth 1. He had his powers taken away from him by Zoom, which is an ability in the comic books that has really only been performed by the Dark Flash. Nico, what were your thoughts on the look of Earth 2? Just who is this reincarnation of Harrison Wells? Is he Zoom, or is Zoom a completely different entity?
I love that Tomorrowland sort of futuristic look. That was a lot of fun, and yes, I'm hoping we actually get to go over there and see it in more detail.
I think we will.
I think this Harrison Wells is the real Earth 2 Harrison Wells, who was not killed by Eobard Thawne, but rather was the same man that Harrison Wells on Earth 1 was before he was killed and replaced by Eobard Thawne / the Reverse Flash. Thus, I do not believe that he is the Reverse Flash on Earth 2 at all, but that Zoom is another world speedster who is going from world to world to kill the speedsters on each parallel world and steal their powers. I agree that this version of Zoom does sound very much like the Dark Flash and his powers, and could indeed be a version of that. But my guess is that the Earth 2 Harrison Wells is actually a good guy. I'm going to say that. Though he could have inadvertently created this Dark Flash, or the Harrison Wells from our world could have inadvertently created the Dark Flash when the Reverse Flash was lost to existence by Eddie killing himself. I'm not exactly sure how Zoom came about, but I think Zoom comes from another world than Earth 1, and probably potentially other than Earth 1 or 2, and has stolen the powers of a number of Flashes and other speedsters across the multiverse, and that's why he is so much faster than the rest of the speedsters, especially Jay's Flash.
So he's kind of a guy that always tried to take out the Flash of every world to become the ultimate speedster.
Well, that's what I think what Jay even said in this episode, is what he said.
Yeah. Kind of like that movie, The One, with Jet Li, if you've seen that.
Yes. Yeah. Or The Highlander.
Yes.
Yeah. To be the one and only and most, and you know, complete power. But that being said, I think Jay and Barry will strike a blow to Zoom at some point this season and restore Jay's speed. The other possibility is that over time, Jay will just naturally regain his ability to tap into the Speed Force. But I like the idea that Zoom stole it, and thus they need to do something to him or somehow steal it back. And I think that that has to happen somehow before they can ultimately defeat him for good at the end of the season. And I do think that they're going to recruit the other speedsters from across the multiverse to work together to combat Zoom. And basically, they're going to tell him, look, you can try and beat him yourself and you're going to fail and just make him stronger, or we can all work together. And that's the only way that we're going to be able to defeat him and keep each of our worlds safe.
Kid, on the other Flash show, in the comic books, they had Cisco get recruited by the government to be a part of their Justice League of America because he was the biggest threat to speedsters, got the Flash. So it could even be Cisco, who is a big part of striking this blow, that gets Jay's powers back.
Yeah, I'm thinking that maybe Cisco uses his untapped power and accidentally unleashes Jay's power back to him when they end up going up against Zoom. And I think that would be a fun way, and it forced the issue with Cisco that he would have to tell him at that point.
Right. I think that sums up this episode.
Yep.
Good or too fun and excitement. And then we're going to go back to the more realistic side of this DC universe with the Arrow episode that kicked them all off of a plotline that I've wanted to see this show do for a while and has theorized for the past couple seasons. So let's talk about the Arrow episode, Good Title the Candidate.
Jessica Danforth, an old family friend of the Queen's, decides to run for mayor of Star City to provide a source of inspiration. A crazed hitman, Lonnie Mitchin, targets her for death, and Oliver and his team are forced to step in. In the past, Oliver infiltrates the island and finds a poppy field run by Baron Reeder.
We made a theory at the end of Season 3 that Thea being resurrected because of the Lazarus Pit was going to send her down a dark path, turning the character into the villain. Cheshire, who is the mother of Roy Harper's daughter, in the comic books. But we had both decided that was off the table once Thea became Speedy. But he came back again in this episode. Guess she lit the villain of the episode on fire. Yeah, we know he is going to come back for revenge. Guess this encounter is going to get to the supervillain anarchy. However, I'm wondering if there's a cure to the bloodlust created by the Lazarus Pit. Because the problem I foresee coming is that once we get Thea's issues sorted out, we're going to have to watch this conflict or story arc kept all over again with Sarah, possibly on this show. Get for sure Legend of Tomorrow. Nico, how do you think this is going to get worked out? God, where were you happy they brought back the Thea being affected by the Lazarus Pit storyline?
I think them bringing this story back, or this theory we had being validated in this episode, as a direct result of bringing the White Canary to the Legends of Tomorrow show. So essentially, they brought this theory back, or made it happen, so that the White Canary could come to the Legends of Tomorrow show. The whole point of taking Thea and Sarah to the Lazarus Pit is for Laurel to resurrect Sarah, but also to understand what it does to someone, and if there is any way to combat the darkness or bloodlust it seems to bring to someone brought back. I don't actually think we will have to see this same story told on both shows, because I believe we will either see both Sarah and Thea working together on Arrow to cure themselves of this affliction, or we'll see Thea essentially learn the secrets of surviving the pit, and when Sarah is finally resurrected, Thea will be her guide in finding her way back to her old self. So I could see them going either way, but I do think that we're only going to have to ever see it once, and then we'll maybe see Sarah show signs of it, and then Thea and her have a moment, and then essentially we can infer that Thea has told her the secret. secret of finding herself or coming back to herself, or they're going to do it all on Arrow and the two of them are going to figure it out together. So I have a feeling these guys know exactly what they're doing with regard to this arc, because it's so central to Sarah's existence on the Legends team that they're not going to just be, you know, kind of winging it as the season goes. I think they have it very well established and exactly every step is already laid out.
Well, I agree. I think there's something out on this. Now, speaking of having things laid out, one thing I'm kind of questioning on the laying out is just me being surprised to see Laurel be the one who makes the decision to bring Sarah back to life, because I thought that was the reason Captain Lance is working for Damian Dark, which I think would have been a far more interesting, unlikely scenario. Because in the comic books, the version of Black Canary that is essentially Laurel functions as the mother of Team Arrow, being a shoulder to cry on, who are confident for support, like she was with John in this episode. But to see her do something that's reckless, which she knows the Lazarus is bad, is out of character for her. And I think she's going to make Gunnus not necessary, gonna be out of alcohol because of its fear of the pit. Nico, did it bother you that Laurel ended up being the character who is all gung-ho about bringing Sarah back when it would have been more interesting for the Captain Lance and the Damian Dark storyline?
No, it makes sense that Sarah is the one thing that drives Laurel to do something crazy. Think about it. It was crazy for her to become the Black Canary, completely out of character for her, until it wasn't. And she started training and turning her life around. She realized that the best way to honor her sister was to carry on her mantle as the Black Canary. Sarah means everything to Laurel. Her two deaths have defined her life, causing her to make the most important decisions in her life. For her to take this chance to see her sister and restore her, it was too much of an opportunity for her to not at least try. So I don't actually have a problem with this, because this Laurel character would give anything for her sister, and that makes it something I could see her doing.
Yeah.
As for Detective Lance, he's only working with Damian Dark because Dark threatened Laurel, and Captain Lance feels that he can't lose his only living daughter, so he sold his soul to Dark to save Laurel. It really did not have anything to do with Sarah. As far as Lance knows, Sarah is dead, and dead is dead.
Okay.
So I don't see any connection with Lance and Damian Dark having to do with Sarah. I think the threat was towards Laurel and exposing her and killing her.
Would you think Lance will be changing his tune when Sarah comes back, when he realizes he has both his daughters alive again?
I think that'll be a moment to, yeah, I do think that'll be an opportunity for Lance to fight back against Dark and refuse to work with him anymore. And I just don't know what that means, ultimately.
Great, because he can basically just say, you know, my daughter's a ninja. She can take you out now. Cardinal's not, so maybe that's coming. Maybe we'll see that.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I really like that the writers gave Felicity her own story for this her first half of the season. Because as long as she has distractions while working at Team Arrow to keep her focus off of criticizing Oliver, she's a likable character. But even though it was completely innocent, I think her storyline was another foreshadowing of her death. Because the young boy introduced to this episode, Curtis Holt, who... this guy who becomes the superhero Mr. Terrific. Kind of one time he ran the computers at the Watchtower, so that makes him a perfect Felicity replacement if they do happen to lose her. So Nico, did you like the addition of this Curtis Holt character? And is Curtis being set up as Felicity's apprentice so we can honor her if she dies by taking her place on Team Arrow?
I really like this actor, Echo Kellum, who is playing Curtis Holt, and I think I'm really going to like this Curtis Holt character, but I think it is entirely too early to be thinking that it is a done deal that he will replace Felicity if she dies. Hell, I'm not even sure that they are going to kill Felicity and not Thea or someone else from Team Arrow. I'm assuming that Curtis will become Mr. Terrific when his husband is killed in a car accident or substitute killed in a car accident caused by unrest in Star City, since it was the death of his wife and unborn child in the comics and a visit from the Spectre that created Mr. Terrific there. So I can see him becoming the Mr. Terrific because of something happening to the husband he mentioned in this episode. I can also see why you think he might be a replacement candidate for Felicity should she die, but I think it's also too early to jump on that as a valid theory yet.
Neil McDonough, as usual, is giving us just, you know, a great performance as the new big man, Damian Dark, because he is doing a great job of playing a villain that has morals, straddling the sides of good and evil, much like the Kingpin on the Daredevil Netflix TV series. Because we saw that he had an issue with kidnapping and hurting children. And I'm wondering, since his powers are divine from the Mystic Arts, if he has a connection to the exorcism God Ra that drove Constantine on his TV series. Because he is set to appear on Arrow later this season. Nico, am I onto something with this idea, or what do you think developed Damian Dark's sense of honor among criminals?
I think Constantine will appear on Arrow because Damian Dark deals in the occult and Mystic Arts, and that's right up John Constantine's alley. So I think think that will be what brings him to the Arrow story, but I don't think that there will be a direct connection with Constantine and Dark, though there may be some history between the two. I don't think it's going to be that Damian Dark was involved in that botched
Newcastle or whatever he called it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's always a possibility, but I just don't foresee it. Although, I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but if I remember from the Teen Titans books, where Damian Dark had many appearances, I believe the Teen Titans found him out to be a fraud when it came to the Mystic Arts, and maybe Constantine will expose him in this episode, because in those comics, he used long-forgotten science and tricks, much like a modern-day magician does, to trick people into believing they have magical powers. It's just a thought that maybe Damian Dark is faking it here, and he's using other means to appear to have these mystical abilities. It's just a thought.
Like an alchemist.
Yes, exactly.
That could be, okay.
So it might be that he and Hive have developed some device or something that gives him the appearance of these mystical arts. Then again, he was praying and, you know, using a shrine to focus his powers. So I don't know. They could go either way, where he is actually has the mystic abilities, but he could also be a fraud. I think it would be fun to see. I think it would be fun to see him exposed as a fraud and Constantine to be the one to do it.
Yeah, I like the idea of the music realm. That's the magic realm. Of him just being a magic guy, because I think that's going to be such a big part of Legends of Tomorrow. They kind of need to spooky that aspect to the DC universe to us. Very much so like the multiverse.
Sure, sure.
So I think they're going to make him magic because of that. Even though the alchemist thing is fascinating, because I would not put it past them on this show.
Yeah, I think the magic route is probably the more likely. The fraud thing just really made me think for a while, and I was like, oh man, that would be amazing if it ends up being he's using some or even a future tech that makes it look like he's got mystic abilities, but it's actually, you know, a scientific technological device. And that could tie into Vandal Savage as well, or it could tie into Rip Hunter and their battles going forward. So there's a lot of different possibilities, but I think the magic route is probably the most likely. You're right about that. I'm excited about it for sure. Now, you asked about the sense of honor or his feelings that there are rules to these sort of things. I'm not really actually sure where that comes from. I know the League of Assassins definitely does not have that same notion, and he was a former member of the League until Ra's was chosen over him to become the next Ra's al Ghul, and Damian Dark left to form or join Hive. So yeah, not quite sure where that sense of honor comes from. Maybe it was part of who he was before becoming a member of the League of Assassins, and it's just something in his nature. So I just don't know.
Well, did Ra's have his family killed in front of him to become Ra's al Ghul? Is it possible that Ra's did that with his family? Could Damian Dark kind of quit against the League because of that or wanting that revenge?
That's definitely a possibility. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that's another thing we can do as well. Finally, I throw out the theory that this show was going to develop into the Oliver Queen from Arrow story arc that I really enjoyed from the comic book. And it's finally happening, which makes me very excited to see where the season is going, especially as a Green Arrow Black Canary shipper, because the outcome of the story gets with them getting engaged. But believe me, as someone who has read that story arc in the comics, Oliver has a rough and bumpy road ahead of him, filled with solid television drama, because he gets on the campaign trail. So, Nico, are you ready to see this strong story could the Green Arrow comic books unfold on live action television? Good. Do you think I was right for the writers to tell this story in regards to the show's development?
Yeah. You know, Dan, you called it a long way back that this was what you wanted to see, but I was actually skeptical that if that was what they were going to do and the way that they were going to go on this show. But lo and behold, that is exactly where things are going, and you called it way back in probably season one, maybe season two, but absolutely a while ago. I think it has solid potential and really fits well within the story they have set up, not just this season, but from the very beginning. I think the battles with Captain Lance make a whole lot more sense, as it seems that that was the catalyst Oliver needed to become the Green Arrow, but also to run for and eventually become the mayor of Star City now. I'm excited to see how it plays out, and if it is as successful here on television as it was in the comics. There's definitely strong potential, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I agree too. You know, when this show first came out, I kind of came up with Paul Leiter's story ideas that would be good for this show in the future, or where I would like to see it go. Okay, this is a good one. But for Oliver to work up the courage to get to this point, can take on the role, can he go through a really hard situation with Black Canary getting severely injured, because she was his love interest at the time. So I'm wondering if that bridge is going to be crossed by Felicity instead.
Definitely a possibility. Yeah, definitely a possibility.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a possibility. I think that would be a good motivator and a push for him, as it was in the comics. I think it just needs to be an injury or a scare or something like that. I don't think it necessarily has to be the death that drives him or pushes him or ultimately helps him win the, you know, become the mayor.
Yeah.
I think just the threat of it is enough, probably, and that'll help. I don't know. We'll see.
I think the campaign trail, doing that, and what's happened to all the previous mayors of this candidate that was running, that there's going to be a falling out. Okay, that there's somebody that Gulliver cares about who's going to get caught in the crossfire, okay, maybe injured.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that sums up most of the episode. I think we got DC Nation covered for the most part for this week.
Well, before we do that, we had some listener feedback about Era, and I wanted to read the nice email that we got from Leah Ratke. I listen to DC Nation and love the podcast, but I have a bone to pick with you guys. One, I'm a Green Arrow fan and read the comics. Two, I am not an Olicity fan. And three, Arrow got on the air as an interpretation of the Green Arrow, a reality, no superpowers-based show that drew in non-comic book people and allowed the CW to put the show on the air. She also says, I think Arrow would be much better on Netflix. Personally, I think the CW hampers Arrow. I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yeah.
That being said, Arrow allowed the possibility of a more comic-faithful show like The Flash to be put on TV. Thank you, Arrow. So if Arrow chooses its own way different than the comics, the groundwork for that has already been laid. It's not reasonable to expect Arrow to follow the Green Arrow comics as faithfully as The Flash does. I do love that Oliver is now telling the truth and is making jokes, much more Green Arrow, but until he becomes much more social justice minded like Laurel, there can be no chance for these two to be together, Black Canary or not. Even if Felicity dies, there is just no chemistry between Laurel and Oliver on screen, and until that changes, maybe season 5, it simply is not going to happen. Also, Laurel still has a lot of detractors out there, and time is needed to keep building her up and make the Black Canary likable. Now, I think Laurel is impressive. She gets knocked down but never gives up, and has been on her own island for a while now. But again, not the most likable, and still no chemistry between her and Oliver. I'm very glad that Black Canary ditched that awful wig, comic or no.
Yeah.
Also, I love Lila and all the strong women on Arrow. I really enjoyed, to my surprise, the Olicity domestic scenes and found them hysterical. It was great that Felicity was the one to get Oliver back to Star City, a pleasant change from the girlfriend or wife always wanting the vigilante to stop. Best regards, Leah Ratke. Thank you, Leah, for the great email. I don't have anything that I can say, no, you're wrong. I think you make very valid points. And I agree that at this point, it would make zero sense for Oliver and Laurel to just all of a sudden be together. You're absolutely, right. There's not enough chemistry between the two. They have not built it up. But my counter to you is that to do that, they have to get rid of Felicity, and that needs to grow. And it's going to be a season long, season more to get from where they are now to where we could even consider them starting to date. I think they did a very good job in season one of getting that going and seeing that start. And then they put a huge stop in it by killing Tommy and Laurel blaming Oliver or blaming the Arrow for not saving Tommy, and that causing Oliver to blame himself for not being able to save Tommy as well. So I do think that they had chemistry. It's completely gone. You're 100% right about that. And they would have to do a lot of work to get there. But the first step in that long journey is they have to remove Felicity from the love interest of Oliver. None of that can start until she is out of the way or has stopped being the love interest. So I agree with you 100% in everything that you've said, and I hope you continue to enjoy the podcast, and thank you for being a loyal listener.
Yes, I really want the Black Canary Green Arrow thing to happen on the show, but I have a full understanding that it's going to take time to get there. But I think the pieces are in place now, with Oliver being a mayor, making him get the civil servant aspect side of things. So I think between that and, you know, more possible death of Felicity, then it's going to start making up, getting there. But it could take, you know, almost all of this, the rest of this season, possibly a whole other season before they get there. Because I didn't think Lois and Clark were ready for a long time on Smallville. Come look where that ended up. But we liked that at the end.
Yep.
So that could be there too. So now we're going to roll into the closing.
All right. So on our next episode, we continue our coverage of the second season of Gotham with episode 5 and an episode of Flash and Arrow. So make sure to join us again for all of that. But for now, roll that pre-recorded closing.
Get at our DC Nation podcast website, located at dcnation.acrosstheairways.com. Go on our Across the Airways website, located at acrosstheairways.com. You can check out our other podcast shows, including Across the Airways, which provides entertainment news, along with weekly reviews, got our favorite shows not related to superheroes, such as Sleepy Hollow, Castle, Star Wars Rebels, Supernatural, Person of Interest, Doctor Who, New Girl, Modern Family, The Big Bang Theory, and more to come in the future, because the TV lineup is always changing. By the way, if you're a DC Comics fan who also has an interest in the Marvel Comics side of things, things. I would recommend checking out the show hosted by Danny Babacht, Nikki Amy, and myself, Gnotis Helicarrier, the Shield Podcast, located at helicarrierpodcast.com, get in the iTunes store. In addition to these programs, check out Thronescast, our podcast hosted by Nico, Nikki, and myself, dedicated to reviewing episodes of HBO's Game of Thrones, which is available at the website thronescast.acrosstheairways.com or on iTunes. You can send us your thoughts on each Game of Thrones episode by emailing us at thronescast@gmail.com, tweeting us at thronescast, again that's at thronescast, leaving us a voicemail at 773-809-3363, again that's 773-809-3363, or by posting on our Facebook page located at facebook.com/thronescast. Also, you can listen to Across the Airways, the DC Nation podcast, Thronescast, a Game of Thrones podcast, get Helicarrier, the Shield podcast, got the Mix Internet radio station, owned by Jack Stifle, Stitcher Radio, or if you use Apple devices, download the Podcast Box app. And if you're on a Windows or Android device, you can download our apps from the Amazon Marketplace. And the Windows Marketplace has a regular Windows Phone app. As for how you can contact us to give your own insight on the TV shows we review, provide suggestions on how we can improve your podcast listening experience, or just to say you like what we're doing, email us at acrosstheairwaves@gmail.com. Comment on our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at Across the Airwaves. Again, there's no the on there. It's just Across the Airwaves. Join our circle on Google Plus. Or leave us a voicemail. Get 773-809-3363. Again, that's 773-809-3363. I would also recommend that you check out our YouTube page, which features trailers for upcoming movies and television events, such as Avengers Age of Ultron, Batman vs. Superman, and Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. Along with this content, the ATA YouTube channel is a great source for panels from past Comic-Cons and will be a great source to find videos coming out of Comic-Con 2015 this summer.
All right, so once again, for our ATA podcast folks, get people to help us out, Nikki Amy, Cool Kim, Michael J. Putty, got Steve Nostro, got Dan Schmidt.
And I'm Nico Restek.
And we will catch you on the airwaves. See you guys. Have a great week, and thanks for tuning into this multiverse, fun-filled episode of the DC Nation podcast. See you guys. Have a great week.
Now return to our regularly scheduled program.